Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Round 8 of the Great Christmas Light Fight is underway on ABC. Executive producer Brady Connell joins me next. There's a new female-focused programming service in town, My Time Movie Network from Cinedigm. We'll learn about My Time's 2021 time ahead from manager Jacob Nasser. That's in the next half hour. More and more, Amazon's IMBD.TV is playing home to original content. The latest example for this ad-supported outlet is Corner Gas Animated. The mastermind of this offbeat tune, creator and star Brent Butt, yes, that's his name, Brent Butt, comes by top of the next hour from Vancouver. Also ahead, Michael Crichton's new TV strain, Hulu cans Hellstrom permanently, and our new classic trivia question with three, count them, three prizes in play. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Block Talk Radio, Spreaker and Tuner Radio, and presented on Amazon Music and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 37 degrees at the top of the hour. We are in the midst of storm one of two expected here in the New York metro area this week. And we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. Right now it is raining. We expect the rain to hang in with us for another couple of hours. Then on Wednesday we're expecting all snow. Right now the latest forecast, 40 inches in New York City, lower south of the city, north of the city, maybe as high as a foot. Delighted to have you with us. Great 90 minutes in store for you. It's the first of three episodes we're doing this week on this pre-Christmas week 2020. So get involved. Pick up the phone and give us a call. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. Your catch goes to the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. And our chat room is in business right now, so use that as well. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions of Vinny Live with you. Brady Connell from the Great Christmas Light Fight on ABC joins us live from California after these news notes. The late best-selling author Michael Crichton had a long-running TV creation during his life, ER. Now post his passing in 2008. Crichton has a new possibility for another and beyond. New talent management company Range Media Partners has a new contract to develop TV and film concepts from the author's archives. Initially, Range will collaborate with archive venture Crichton's son, managed by widow Sherry, on one TV series and feature film based on unpublished material. If you haven't heard, no more Hellstrom at Hulu, ending the programmer's relationship with Disney's defunct Marvel TV unit. Hellstrom launched earlier this fall and was given little public promotion. Now a bunch of quickies for you. HBO will go forward with Irma Beth, a miniseries adaptation of the 1996 feature directed by Olivier Assayas. Alicia Vikander will star. BBC's famous Natural History Unit will set up a production office in Los Angeles. California's wildfire crisis will be documented starting January 3rd on Discovery Channel. Cal Fire is the series title. Nonfiction bestseller Surviving Death will be turned into a 6-episode docuseries by Netflix. Jerelle Jerome, this is breaking news. Jerelle Jerome, the Emmy Award-winning star of the Ava DuVernay miniseries last year on Netflix, When They See Us, will be starring in a brand-new series at Amazon called I'm a Virgo, put together by musician-turned-entrepreneur Boots Riley. And Universal Content Productions will enter the graphic book and comic book universe next March 3rd with Proctor Valley Road. It's Boom Studio, will work with UCP on both the comic book and a proposed TV adaptation. The name of the book, again, is Proctor Valley Road. It's expected to be a comic book series and begin on March 3rd. And that is news notes for today. 8 years ago, ABC launched what has now turned out to be one of the few unscripted holiday season perennials, The Great Christmas Light Fight. And it's currently running Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. That's Eastern Pacific Time. And joining us live right now from Rainier Ray, California, is one of the key executive producers, Brady Connell. Brady, happy holiday season. Lights and all to you.
You too, Simon. Thanks for having us. And thanks for all that news. I feel like I'm completely up to speed now on Hollywood. Thank you.
Good for you. We appreciate it, too. How did this series become such a holiday perennial?
really by accident, honestly. I mean, I hate to say that, but you know, when ABC first called me way back, you know, in 2013, they had some slots during Christmas, and they asked us if we could put this this Christmas lights competition show together, and we did it quickly. Within a few weeks, we were shooting, and then aired that same year. And then, you know, it did really well. And then they ordered it for a second season, and it did better. I think it increased in ratings by 28% from season one to season two. So they knew they had sort of, you know, hit a chord with at least Christmas lovers anyway. And then the ratings have stayed high all these years. And we're just so grateful to be able to do such a fun show every year for, you know, for not only Americans, but the world. We're in several countries around the world, and we're on airplanes, and feels like Christmas wouldn't be the same without us now.
And what is the chord? You know, I know that Food Network for a number of years has had a very big thing with baking, you know, Christmas competitions in food, like holiday baking, holiday wars, Christmas, you know, cooking or cookie competitions. But this is a very interesting one because it deals with a side of Christmas that sometimes you take for granted, the idea of, you know, everybody hanging lights and all over the place, in their homes, outside their homes, on the grass, and so on. How did this come to be? What do you think the spirit and the nub of the success is?
Well, I think, I mean, there's two things. I think we did catch a wave of, you know, especially all these light shows that were kind of going viral on the internet. So that was happening right around then. I think that's why ABC could give it a try. But I think what no one really expected was the storytelling that we have discovered, you know, with these people. I mean, all these families are doing this, and many of them are doing it for decades. We have somebody on the show last week that has been doing it for 38 years. So it's not like, you know, a new thing. I mean, this is, you know, communities across America have been enjoying Christmas lights in their neighborhood for decades. Probably back to the, I don't know, the 40s and 50s is probably when it all started. And I think we tapped into that feeling of being able to just drive around your neighborhood and enjoy the lights. And now we're finding out who are these people who take the time to do that for the community, and they have their own stories. And you know, we cast based on lights, so we just, you know, the best lights in the country is what we put on the show, and then whatever story comes along with that family, we tell that story too. And it's a good reminder everyone has a story. So there's a lot of community that is a part of the show that I think other Christmas shows don't have. It's really ultimately comes down to the community.
How soon, by the way, do these communities gear up to be on your program? Is it something that is like, you know, months in the making, like the day after Christmas, a community says, I love what this community did on your show. I'm going to get started to get an entry.
Yeah. Everyone always wonders, you know, how early. It used to be that they would have to do it very early because we shot the same year that we aired the first three seasons. So we would call them, you know, in June and say, hey, we'd love to have you be on the show, but you have to start your lights, you know, at the end of August or beginning of September in order to be ready for us to show up at the end of September and October so that we could have time to edit it for December. But one year we shot two seasons all at once, and now we're a year ahead. So now the families don't have to do it so early. They can, you know, they usually put about a month in before we arrive. And now we start shooting in November, but we shoot through December. We're still shooting right now for our next season. So just for, you know, for people who like the show, they should know that we are now a year ahead. So the show that's airing this year, we shot in 2019 pre-COVID. So you'll still see crowds and high fives and all that. But then next year, 2021, you'll see the show that we shot during COVID. So it'll be slightly different.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Brady Connell. He's the executive producer of The Great Christmas Light Bite, Season 8, now running Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station. He joins us live from Marina Del Rey, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And happy holiday season for all of us at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker Generator, all of you tuning in to the program all about TV's current and future. Simon Avon with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Brady, well, make the call go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. First of three episodes we are doing this week. Next one is less than 40 hours from now, Wednesday at this very hour. And if you love The Sopranos, you're going to like our guest that will lead things off. His name is Nick Brachia, and he has written a book called Off the Back of a Truck. It's all about The Sopranos. Anything that's like trivia associated with that show, well, it's in this book. And later this hour, you'll have an opportunity to win a copy of that book because that's our latest classic trivia prize. That'll be coming up near the top of the hour. So stay tuned. You can win Nick's book, and then you can hear him He'll be our lead guest on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brady, as the years have gone on, how more imaginative have the lights been from the contestants?
You know, I have to admit, when I first started working on the show, I thought, all right, you know, how once you've seen one Christmas light, you've seen them all kind of thing. And I couldn't have been more wrong. As we go to each community around the country and we see the creativity is growing and growing, I am constantly amazed. I just got back from shooting a house where they created an entire a field of wildflowers, and it was beautiful. I mean, literally thousands of lights like spread out across the front lawn. And she had handmade every single wildflower and put Christmas lights in there. And then she put these big mountains, you know, behind the wildflowers. And I just thought, this is so creative. And I think ultimately I view it as an art. You know, it's an art form. It's painting with light. And it's really endless now. And so I highly underestimated the creativity of the people and what they can do with lights. And I think it can go on forever. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families applying to be on the show. And every time we get a tape, you know, or we see a video, we're just amazed at what they've come up with. So we put it out there. We want everybody to be unique. So if anyone's listening on your show that wants to be on our show, just, you know, let your creativity flow.
Mm. By the way, how did that person come up with the idea of not just come up with it, but execute the idea of making flowers out of lights?
I have no idea. She loves, you know, she loves planting, and she has a lot of plants in her yard. And I think she said that it started with a story. Actually, she said that she bought a typical, you know, little deer, like a wired deer that you buy at Home Depot, and she put it on her front lawn. And then she started saying, hey, you know, a deer needs to eat things, you know, and a deer needs to drink water. So she actually put this whole blue river through the wildflowers, and then she added all these rabbits and turtles. And so she's a storyteller, ultimately, that's what she is. And we're just blown away by the amount of work that is put into some of these displays, and certainly money, you know, they put a lot of money into it too. But like I said, it all comes back to the community, and they're doing it for the kids in the neighborhood, and you certainly can't fault them for that.
Mm-hmm. So explain the application process and how you pick the contestants. Is it always a community, a group of people from a community that are submitting the entry, or do you accept individuals? And once you get everybody in by the deadline, how do you pick and choose who gets to play?
Yeah, it's a really straightforward process. We will see, you know, we have to see something on video at some point, because we don't go out and scout. Unless it's in LA, we'll go check it out. But generally, we are casting based on video that we see, whether it's something that someone else posted, maybe somebody who drove by, they posted a video, and our casting team happens to see it online, and then we have to track down, you know, where they live. Or it's an actual website, it's lightfightcasting.com, or abc.com/casting. And, you know, if someone wants to throw their video on there and tell us who they are, we will definitely look at it. And then as we cast each season, and like I said, we have hundreds and hundreds to choose from, we just sort of look at all of those, and we narrow it down to the very best 24 displays for that year. And we also try to have a little bit of a variety of, you know, places that we go around the country and types of displays. We like to have you know, static displays and drive-through displays, and then some of these more synchronized light shows to sort of give it a variety in an episode. So we just pick our favorites, and then we you know, then we clear the family. We have to make sure that they're a good family, and you know, they're all set to be on television. And then we just tell them, and then they get it all ready for Christmas.
And with people who have not seen your series, do they, the families of contestants, have to recreate the light displays that you get the videos on, or you just look at the videos and then you have a judging panel judge what's the best? So what is, how does the competition work, basically, is what I'm asking, and then we'll get into the judging of it.
Oh, so sorry, the casting part is literally done by video. So if you don't have video of your display, you probably won't get on the show, because we have to be able to show the video to ABC and get their final approval and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the judging is all in person, as you know.
Mm-hmm. So does once the contestants are accepted, do they have to recreate the display? I mean, how does the competition work?
Oh, you mean like they can. Well, we assume that they will do at least what we saw on video from the year before. It's not going to get worse, right? So we always, of course, encourage them, hey, you're going to be on Christmas Light Fight. It's national exposure, you know, and, you know, you just want to do whatever you can. And so a lot of times we'll show up, and it'll be twice as big as it was from when we cast them just a year earlier. Or sometimes we'll show up, and it'll be exactly the same, and that's fine. They can do whatever they want to do. And they can also pick whatever music they want to pick, and we may or may not be able to use it on the show. But we want them to be able to present their display to the judge live in whatever way they want. And that's what happens. You know, the judge shows up at the last minute. You know, we pick a night, and that's the deadline. And if it's not ready, then it's a problem. We've actually had that happen twice, I think, in the whole run of the show. And one of them, they were still able to get on the show, and one of them, they were never able to get their lights running that night, so we had to replace them recently. But the judge shows up, and within 15 minutes, they are turning the lights on, and then they spend the rest of the night checking it out and walking around, and then the judge actually goes to four different places around the country to judge those four segments in that episode, and then they reflect and they talk to the ABC lawyers and stuff to make sure that it's all fair, and then they go back and visit the winner, and then we surprise the winner. So it's everything you see is pretty much the way it works. There's no big secret.
Yeah. As you said, Brady, there's a great deal of creativity involved. It's you can have lights, you can have music with the lights. The lights can go on and off. They can go in different colors. They can rotate. You can do like a merry-go-round kind of thing. So there's a lot of moving parts. How much time do they have, the contestants have, to assemble their light show? And who judges? For those people who don't know, who judges? Who judges, and what's the judging criteria?
Yeah, it's a good question. It used to be, when we first started the show, we were trying to figure out the format of the show, and we treated it like kind of like a traditional competition show where we thought, okay, we'll give them 3 weeks, you know, to decorate their house, and at the end of 3 weeks, that's when we show up. And if we have to make sure that they don't start until the beginning of those 3 weeks, so we actually had to have them take a picture and send it to us. And then we just decided, you know what, there was no reason to do that, because some people actually leave their lights up, or some of their lights up, all year long. So we took that rule away. It's now you can do whatever you want. You can start 2 days before, or you can start 4 months before. And it's turned out to be much better for the families, because people have, you know, they have weddings and they have personal lives, and it's just much more flexible for them. So there's very few regulations. Literally, we just tell them it has to be ready when the judge shows up. And the judges are Carter Osterhaus, who's fantastic, and Tanya Nyack. And they're both really talented sort of designers and tastemakers in their own way. Tanya designs pretty large restaurants all over the country, and she was on the Restaurant Impossible. And, of course, Carter was on Trading Spaces. So they both know their stuff. They know color. They know depth. They know composition, and they love music. And so they just, you know, bring whatever talent and skills they have to the judging table. And then they literally write down on a piece of paper the things that they loved about each display. And then when they've judged all four of them, they have to decide which one they like the best.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with Brady Connell, the executive producer of The Great Christmas Light Fight, Season 8, now underway on ABC, Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. at 8 p.m. Actually runs 8 to 10 p.m. 2-hour program, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific Time in your local ABC station. In a moment, we're going to find out about the current season being taped as we speak and how the coronavirus pandemic is impacting how it's getting produced. Brady joins us live from Marina Del Rey, California this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Found I'm with you on the other side of the U.S. of A, Nueva York, 37 degrees at the top of the hour. Rain still going on. As I mentioned earlier, it's a storm one of two that we are expecting as this week unfolds. We're happy you're unfolding with it. If you have a question or comment or remaining moments with Brady, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our Friday episode, we got a good one for you. We're going to talk about a venture that we think is going to be one of the most interesting to kick off 2021 on. It's called Black Tag. Its creators see it as the Netflix combo YouTube for African-American creators running on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We'll have Chief Executive Officer Akin Abawabi and President Osman Sako Sow will be board. Also coming up, we will have the executive producers of the popular Fox medical drama, The Resident, Andrew Chapman and Peter Elcott. And in case you haven't heard, The new season starts next month on Fox, and it will not deal with the pandemic. We'll ask them why. That was a story in the Hollywood Reporter this morning on their website. So check it out. Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brady, as you said, you are going to be, you're now taping season 9, and you're doing it amid this coronavirus pandemic. How has it impacted the way you're producing this?
Well, quite a bit, really, in terms of how we produce it. We did have to put together a proposal that we submitted to Fremantle, which is a studio, and to ABC to let them know how we put, you know, wanted to shoot the show within the COVID protocol that the entertainment industry has put forth. And probably many of your listeners are very familiar with it. It's you know, the main reason that we were able to go back into production is because of this big document that was approved by all the unions. So we had to fully understand that. But our show is very unique in that we shoot at 24 different locations around the country for one season of the show, as opposed to shooting on a, you know, a stage or in one outdoor location. So we literally changed everything. we ended up selecting four homes in a state to make an episode so that our crew could go to that state and then just drive from home to home. We actually provided a private rental car for each crew member so that they could have their own, you know, their own private space and drive and not have to fly or drive in a van and be able to social distance the whole time. They're even eating lunch in their cars. So at lunchtime, we finish shooting. Everyone's wearing masks, of course, and social distancing, and then they go to their car and have lunch by themselves in the car. So that it sounds, you know, kind of behind the scenes, but it's nice to know, you know, the care that that a company like Fremantle and ABC take in order to keep the crew and the family safe. Everyone had to test, of course. The judges had to test, and the whole crew and the families had to test. And then we decided to do it without crowds this year. That was our big decision, and it's working out fine. And I feel bad that that crowds aren't enjoying being on the show, but it's turning out to be a really nice, intimate way for the judge to experience the display. The lights still come on, and they still clap and all that, and they still do the walkthrough and learn about the display. But there won't be any crowds next year. But it's still working out just fine. We're really pleased with the way everything's turned out.
And it's not just, because you mentioned Fremantle, which is behind your program, it's not just impacted your series, but all the Fremantle shows, Supermarket Sweep, Price is Right, Let's Make a Deal, which have all had to, in this whole coronavirus situation, have to adjust. But the difference is that your show is an outdoor show. Their shows are all indoors. And so I'm wondering for the contestants, how has the taping of the show and putting up the light, has that impacted their ability to assemble the lights, or there are certain precautions they now have to take when they have to assemble their light shows?
Well, only because they were going to be interacting with us. You know, they whatever they would do on their own is fine. And it's really interesting that most of the family, I would say all the families, said, you know what, of course we're going to do it this year. Like, we would ask them, are you going to be doing it because with COVID? And they said, absolutely, this year more than any year, we're going to make sure that we get out there. But in terms of safety, we just ask them to basically follow the same protocols that we were following, which is to do their best to quarantine the 10 or 14 days before we arrive. They had to take a test, you know, a couple of days out, and then test again. And then, of course, they're wearing masks when we're all off camera. And then when we're actually shooting, then everyone just removes their masks and socially distances. And it's worked out great. You know, as long as everyone follows the protocols, it's fine. But it hasn't had a huge impact on the families, if that's your main question. They just sort of follow our rules, and everybody's happy.
Yeah. Brady, has working on this show become an all-year-round job for you, or is there another show that you do in between working on this program?
Well, I appreciate you asking. It does not take up the entire year, but we are always casting. For example, we're casting now for season 10. So the season 10 will not air until 2022, 2 years from now. So we want to let people know that, you know, we're basically casting all year round, but especially now, because we want people to go out and take video of their homes and submit it now. And then we will call them down the road, you know, in June, if they got on the show, and then they will shoot next year, a year from now, but it won't air until the next year after that. So there's a lot of planning and forethought that goes into this show in particular because of the lead time. But to the second part of your question, I usually do another show in the first part of the year. Last year I did the reboot of Extreme Makeover Home Edition for HGTV, which was a show that I had done years ago. I had, was the executive producer of that show, and it was great to bring it back. And so that was a really fun year last year to do those two shows. Out of all the shows that are on, you know, the reality shows, I felt very fortunate to do those two shows last year. And what I'm not sure what can be coming up by the beginning of this coming year. We'll see.
Well, with the fact that the vaccine is now being distributed and is now being taken as of this morning, it's looking very good that when you get ready to shoot season 22 for 2020, or season 10, excuse me, for 2022, that you may be able to get, you probably will get the crowds back.
Yeah, I sure hope so. And you know, I'm sure you have a lot of industry listeners. It was a tough 7-8 months there when everything was shut down. Really, you know, tough on the freelancers, especially. A lot of them are paycheck to paycheck. So I'm just, you know, of course, just like everyone else, thrilled about the prospects of a vaccine having such a positive impact on entire industries, the restaurant industry, you know, aerospace, you know, the entertainment. Entertainment, I think, is the number two economic industry in Los Angeles County. And, you know, for that entire industry to shut down, that was pretty significant. So we'll be happy to be back, of course.
Mm-hmm. Season 8 of The Great Christmas Light Flight is now running Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. East Pacific time on your local ABC station. Season 9 being taped now for next year, and then the following year, season 10 will be popping up in 2022. And as I said, hopefully the crowds will be back. Remember, again, this season, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time in your local ABC station. Check your local list for where ABC runs it in your area. And for more details about the program online, go to www or just abc.com. And if you want to be a contestant on the 2022 season of the program, now is the time to alert the Fremantle folks, including Brady. So go to abc.com/casting. That's abc.com/casting. And who knows? You might be a contestant, or people you know, or a community you know, for season 10 of The Great Christmas Light Flight. Brady Cano, thank you again for joining us. All the best to you and your crew for a wonderful holiday season. Congrats on how the show has gone, and it sounds like many, many more seasons to go. And again, we will get through this pandemic, get the crowds back, and your show will be even greater than ever. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you very much, Simon. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, too. Again, have a wonderful holiday season, you and everybody at Fremantle. Take care.
All right, you too.
Brady Cano, executive producer of The Great Christmas Light Flight, joining us live from Marina Del Rey, California. Now, before we have more Tomorrow Be Televised, we've got a message from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're in the mood for a zombie tale, something to scare you for this holiday season beyond, how about trying this audiobook? It's by Javin Bond. It's called Zombie Lake, and it's a book that you can get right now if you are a trial member of Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. It's logged to a radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, IR Radio, et cetera, et cetera. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service, plus great customer service from Amazon, from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Oh, get this. If you're already an Amazon Prime member customer, make that two audiobooks for your trial, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances. Oh, and if you want to go right ahead and subscribe, you can too. When you go to audibletrial.com/televised, check out the information about Audible Plus, where you can get your first 6 months of a subscription for only $4.95 a month. Any way you do it, it makes a great holiday gift that lasts the rest of your life. So how about having today be the day, or this week be the week, that you find out how Audible.com can transform the way you or someone you know can hear the world. And remember, it makes a great holiday gift that lasts all year and all life long. Once again, for all the details, audibletrial.com/televised. Next half hour, we go back to California, this time Studio City. We'll talk to Jacob Nasser. He manages Cinedigm's newest service for smart TV sets and devices, the female-focused My Time Movie Network. You'll hear him, plus our classic trivia question of the week, with our brand-new prize. Get to that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, together reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget tomorrow, BCR brings you Kings in the Morning. Check out Jay King and his great crew tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, Kings in the Morning, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute opening week edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. First of three episodes we're doing this week. Tom and Applebaum with you live from New Web, New York. 37 degrees, top of the hour. Rain continues. Hopefully, they'll let up in the next couple of hours. First of two winter storms we are expecting this week. Wherever you are, we hope all is good, and we are happy you are tuning in. More great guests coming away in the hour ahead. You just joined us. So be part of the program. Interact with a call at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Early this fall, we introduced you to Cinedigm. It is the largest supplier of smart TV programming services. That's for smart TV sets and smart TV devices. They're having a monster year, and they expect to launch quite a few services in 2021. But right now, they have a brand new service called MyTime Movie Network. It is out to be the lifetime television for smart TV sets and smart TV devices. It's original movies and acquired films, too, and much, much more. Joining us live from Studio City, California, is the manager of the service, Jacob Nasser. Jacob, happy holidays to you.
Hey, how you doing, Simon? Happy holidays to you, too.
Very, very fine, thank you. We talked briefly before we came on about the fact that MyTime, which is the newest network, I believe, that Cinedigm is offering, it's off to a very good start.
That's great to hear, and we're off to a great start. And Cinedigm is one of our trusted partners, and for us at MyTime, you know, we're excited to announce we launched in Brazil on Samsung TVs just on the 15th of this week, and we're going into Rakuten in the UK and Spain as well. So in addition to what we're doing in the U.S., we're trying to take that globally as well, and really just getting off to a fast start before these holidays start, with a lot of our programming being oriented to Christmas films and a lot of good stuff in that space.
You want to talk about how you're handling the Christmas film season in a bit. I know that this is a network that has been in the works for about 2 years. How did it finally start to get developed and gel?
Well, as far as for our Christmas slate, we have some competitive programming right there with the pay TV networks. So on our channel, you can go on starting this Tuesday in prime time, starting at 5:30 Eastern. We're going to have Christmas films premiering. It's going to be two different Christmas films every single night, running into a Christmas marathon on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Then we're switching it up on the 26th for Boxing Day. We're going to have a whole bunch of thrillers, so a nice little thriller marathon going. So for us, it's, you know, on the programming side, we look to compete with the pay TV networks and offering that type of content. And to your second question, Simon, how this became a reality is, you know, through a lot of hard work, a lot of just trying to understand the landscape of our industry and how it's very fluid and changing, as you're well aware, and just how we can position ourselves with some of our key advantages to, you know, stay afloat in this changing environment.
Mm-hmm. Go back to the Christmas movie season, because with original movies this year, there's a number of trends. One is a lot of people more people than ever are getting into this season with original films. And more importantly, the films are getting more diverse. There's a bigger effort to get communities of color involved on both sides of the camera. There's also, I know Hallmark and other people have now debuted movies. They're dealing with same-sex partners, dealing with the gay and lesbian community as protagonists. When it comes to the Christmas movies that you are running on MyTime, what is distinguishing them from everybody else out there?
I would tell you that the movies that are running on MyTime, you know, these are all quality films. These are films that you come to appreciate. The films that take you to a world where, you know, this the life is a bit easier and the pastures are a bit greener, but that's okay because it's part of the escapism that makes this, you know, a magical experience. And that's actually the, you know, the haven of media, in my opinion. So for us, you know, our Christmas films are meant to speak to our audience, tell authentic stories. They're grounded in reality. And, you know, we put our money on the production value. We put our focus on the storytelling, the creative narrative of it, and leave it to that to, you know, really bring you into the season and make sure that we're providing par and par su the amount of Christmas content that our audience wants to consume.
Yeah. What percent of the schedule is movies? And of that part of the schedule, how much of the schedule or how much of the output that people can see every month is films that have had theatrical release or art house release or home video release, and how much is, at this point, original, made for the service commissions?
Yeah, so we launched November 19th, so, you know, we're just getting our feet running. At the moment, we are predominantly 100% feature films, but that will be changing in the course of the next 12 months, where we look to introduce some formatted content, some reality content, some limited series, scripted content, among a few other things that we're cooking up with. Obviously, we will continue to be a feature film channel, so that'll be the steak on the plate, if you will. But we do look to diversify our product offering, and we got a few exciting things coming up through 2021. We'll be releasing a limited series, 4 episodes, come 2021, to the exact dates of which we're, you know, we're still playing around on our side, so it's a bit fluid for us. But in that sense,
I want to come back to what you're playing in terms of non-movie material in a little bit. But first, in terms of the movies, what interest level, first of all, are you finding already in your first month that there are certain types of films that viewers are particularly leaning toward, whether it's comedies, rom-coms, horror, suspense, science fiction, fantasy, and or specific filmmakers, women filmmakers, that they seem to like more than others?
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, our content is, you know, a lot of the content are these, if you will, made-for-TV movies. So these movies are designed and, you know, brought to the audience in a seven-act break for the most part. So it's a little less oriented to what you might see in the independent or, you know, the theatrical marketplace. But that's okay, because in the space that we're playing in, we're trying to really bring back the, you know, the fondness and the memories of the million-dollar movies of the weeks, you know, that those TV movies, and really take advantage of what is a working discipline on the pay TV side of, you know, releasing these TV movies through television on the linear side, taking advantage of that and being unrelenting in that sense of new content and a breadth of stories, a breadth of new stories, and really laying into the genres that we know our audience likes, our audience enjoys and consumes. So for us, it's a clear focus to stay in those genres. It's a focus to provide that type of content, and we don't get ourselves too caught up on the fact of, is this a theatrical, is this that. It really comes down to, is this a good narrative, did this tell the proper story, and does this fit within our broader programming scheme of filling in and leaning into the genres that, you know, appeals to our audience.
My Time Movie Network is the latest programming service of smart TV sets and smart TV devices released by Cinedigm, which is really becoming the major supplier of these services to the smart TV universe. We're talking with Jacob Nasser. He's the manager of My Time Movie Network. He joins us live this half hour from Studio City, California, part of the big Hollywood universe out there. And he joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New York on the other side of the U.S. of A. Happy to have you with us on this Monday, first of 3 episodes we're doing this week. If you have a question or comment for Jacob, well, make the call and let's hear you. 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, we'll kick off another 3-episode week. And like we did week of Thanksgiving, we're going to do it back to back to back. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up on Monday, we'll meet an acclaimed documentary producer by the name of Tom Jennings. One of his most important works is Diana, in her own words. It was running on Netflix, now running on Apple TV Plus this holiday season. It's got some very exciting projects for 2021. And then you will meet the creators, it's a dynamic duo, if you will, of a series that was on the web, now is running on TV through Cleo TV, the TV One Network spinoff. Their names are Caleb and Ronnie Davis. The show, Tough Love, L.A. It's the first scripted show Cleo TV is doing in prime time. And you'll meet this couple, and you'll meet more about the show that's coming up a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And on December 22nd, on our special Tuesday episode that week, among our guests, we'll have the chief executive officer of Boston Media, a company that over a year ago, we covered a smart TV service called America's Health Journal, based on a popular PBS series. Well, last week, they launched a brand new service called Health for All Network. It's all about health matters for people of color, delivered by doctors and nurses of color. We will speak with the president of Boston Media, Kelvin Boston. And you'll hear him, that's next Tuesday, 3 p.m. Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jacob, What has it taken to put this network together? How fast did you acquire the content?
It has been a tremendous undertaking. The content that really fuels my Time Movie Network is stemmed from the partnership that drives it, which is a venture that we have called Apple Tree Incorporated, which is a joint venture between myself, Pierre Rochette, and Roger Corby. So our three companies have been in this space for combined 25 years each. And much longer in certain cases, especially for our partners over in Europe. And for us, it's been our business model to produce these movies and distribute these movies for networks, traditional networks. So we made a concerted effort to make a pivot and become our own gatekeepers and make a entry into the marketplace with the advantages of our key disciplines and our traditional business have been producing and distributing this content. So, you know, we had a unique advantage of having a war chest of content to begin with, and we have the means to continue producing and continue making original content for my time, largely through the means of those traditional business models, which can mitigate risk and really give us a jump start in, you know, producing original content without taking on the full burden of risk like many other platforms or networks are having to do.
Yeah. What role do women have in the formation of the network, or in terms of selecting the content, or coordinating the content, or are working with women filmmakers or TV makers in terms of commissioning work?
Absolutely. So you can look, pick, you know, a handful of movies. You have some amazing, amazing female directors, from Ann Wheeler to Tara Cowell Plain. I mean, the list goes on, and you have a large amount of those films made by female producers, from Duray Shavar to Bo Chen Jang. The list goes on and on, and these are, you know, seasoned filmmakers, people who have been in this industry from doing $20 million movies to $1 million movies of the weeks, and, you know, they've been tremendous in the formation of this, and these are people that I work with consistently. And on the producing side, one of the things I'm most proud about is over 50% of the feature films I've been a part of have been produced, directed, either by a woman or a person of color. And my background personally of having come from a minority background is something that's near and dear to our heart over here at My Time. So it's something we take great pride in. For us, it's always been female-focused. A large majority of our C-suite team encompasses of females. We have Kim Wakefield on our team. Maria Bolderes in Spain. The list goes on and on. And from our programming head to our head of deliveries and operations, I mean, our team is really focused on listening authentically and having those voices in the room and making decisions with us.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like one of the interesting aspects of the network is that you're also running films that were made not just in the United States, but were either made or done in languages other than English, produced in Europe, Asia, that kind of thing. Am I right in that?
Most of these movies are produced in the United States, but a lot of these films we have localized with dubs. For example, when we make our entrance into the Spanish market, we will have Castilian dubs. When we make our entrance into Mexico, we will have Latin Spanish dubs. When we make our foray into France, hopefully in February, we'll be launching in France. Everything will be localized in French dubs. So for us, it's really an important footnote for us to make sure when we offer content to audiences, we're offering it in a way that you'd be used to from a traditional network, and not treat this as something that is okay to be secondary. For us, the product has to be on par with the best product in the industry. And for us, getting started just now, you know, we're not quite where we want to be in that sense, but the attention to detail is there, and the initiatives are in place to really grow that side of it and make sure we get ourselves buttoned up. And I think our content offering and our presentation of the channel over this next few months, from the launch in Brazil to the launch in Mexico to Spain to the UK, and, of course, here home in the United States, I think you're going to see My Time Movie Network try to differentiate itself from a lot of the other linear channels in that AVOD space that oftentimes feel too much like a playlist and a little bit missing out on the aspect of this is, you know, a traditional network, or it should be, in our opinion.
Yeah. Before I go back to the reaction from both the public and from the community, the fast-growing community, I should say, of female TV makers and whether it's series makers or movie makers and so forth. What's been the reaction from the ad community? How are you doing in terms of ad support? I know that most of the Citadine networks are ad support to some extent, and they're doing very, very well, I might add, if you read their latest financial statements. How is MyTime doing in terms of getting initial advertiser support?
You know, so far it's doing well. That's something that's handled by our partners in direct advertising. For us, that's, you know, a next iteration where we'll become a little bit more direct with advertisers and try to offer some unique opportunities in the sense that we're being very aggressive at the moment where we have two original films in post ready to be distributed for worldwide. And we're looking heavily at talking to the platforms to do a first window release on the platforms, a world premiere on the right platform, and then have the proper promotion lead you right into MyTime. For us, we see that as our future. We see that as our future, window one releases on MyTime. And whether that is through a partnership with a platform, whether that's a partnership with on the ad space, you know, all of that is coming to fruition right now. We've had a lot of positive conversations on those fronts. So we look to continue on to that, and hopefully we can circle back with something on that soon, Simon.
Yeah. What's been the reaction from women who want to, who see MyTime, they see you're on the air, and they say, I'd like to do a television series for them. I'd like to do, I have a great concept for a movie. I have a great concept for a series of movies. I have a great concept for a television series, whether it's scripted or unscripted. How much reaction are you getting from that side of the ledger, and what are you telling people right now?
I would tell you that we are open to reviewing pitches. We would love to meet and talk to any and all female filmmakers, and any filmmakers for that regard. It's for us, it's really, we believe the good takes care of itself, and for us, we plan our picnics for a rainy day. And what I mean by that, Simon, is, you know, we're always looking out for what's necessary, and for any of the good to come or any type of opportunities to present themselves, we keep our eyes open and ask friends. So, you know, my email is jacob@mytimemovienetwork.com. I'm on my email. You can email me directly. And, you know, I'm always happy to take a look at projects and take a review. And for us, you know, it's an open door policy. We're too small to say no to anyone. And, you know, we take great pride in that, that this is a stop where other independent filmmakers can, you know, come and work with us in a way that's a bit more fluid and a little bit less rigid than maybe some of the traditional, more blue-blooded platforms and networks, if you will.
In a moment, we're going to talk about the plans that MyTime has for 2021 in terms of specifically original content, movies, but also scripted and unscripted programming and miniseries. Jacob Nasser is with us. He's the manager of MyTime Movie Network, now running all over the place on smart TV sets and smart devices, put together by Cinedigm, one of the largest suppliers of programming services to smart TV sets and devices. Jacob joins us live from Studio City, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. You have a question or comment for Jacob, don't be shy. Use that phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name. Coming up before the top of the hour, our classic trivia question. We'll give you the answer to the one we've had over the last 2 weeks. And we have a brand new question, and if you're correct, you have three prizes in play, including our newest prize, which is the new book, Off the Back of a Truck. If you're a big Sopranos fan, you will like this book. And we've got the author coming up on our next episode. His name is Nick Brachia, and he'll be on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So what is the timetable in terms of how MyTime will unfold in 2021?
The timetable right now is, you know, it's a fluid situation in the sense that, you know, we're getting our feet cemented, we're getting our distribution widened, and we're really starting to cement ourselves and get ourselves buttoned up. So for us, it's going to be, you know, active conversation with our partners at Cinedigm, at these platforms, and really look to see what is, you know, the promotions that are looking to be pushed, what type of way we can maximize the rollout of our content, and, you know, really just see if we want to be more aggressive early or if this is something that we're going to, you know, keep building our grassroots audience and start feeding them slowly and slowly. But, you know, it's still to come, Simon, so we don't have any of those details quite set in stone. We have the content and the product ready to launch, so it's just about picking and choosing and finding the right moments to take an opportunity.
And when you're talking about scripted or unscripted series and miniseries, what are you looking at? Are you looking at specific genres? Are you looking at trying to get name actors or try to use ensemble casts or, let's say, break a star? What are you looking at in terms of both scripted and unscripted series?
I would say at the moment we are being a bit judicious in what formats we play in, whether or not we want this to work beyond a two-minute clip that plays within the content, whether we want this to be a standalone series. We're open to a lot of these ideas. I mean, I think at the moment right now, our biggest thing is we're looking for a face of the network, I think an entry point with the right personality that has an ability to communicate to our audience, that is where our audience already is. And I think, you know, we've had a few early discussions on that, and definitely too early to speak on in detail. But, you know, we're actively pursuing that. And I think, you know, for us, it's a wanting to do something that is traditional to the audience, but with our own take on it, our own flavor to it, bringing it into our audience in a way that might be provided to them in a more dramatic manner, a more salacious manner, or just in other formats that I think that we can offer, but in our own way.
Yeah. Are there any plans to attend either the major film festivals that are now getting more involved with episodic television, like Sundance, as well as American Black Film Festival, Urban World, as well as the TV festivals that are happening around the country, like Series Fest in Denver, which was virtual last year, may or may not be virtual this year, the festivals in Austin, Texas, Atlanta, Georgia, et cetera, in terms of looking at pilots for possible series, both scripted and unscripted, or movie ideas?
Yeah, absolutely. I would tell you that the C-suite of my time will be at every major film market, and we have been for years. I mean, you know, the members behind the venture are very active at AFM, MIPCOM, MIPTV, all those major film markets, and we will continue to be, and definitely stoking the fires to see what other kind of content's out there, what might become available, and what type of stuff can be exciting additions to our program catalog.
Cinedigm recently said that they want to launch 15 new programming services between now and the end of 2021. Among them is a multicultural programming service featuring scripted and scripted programming with 21 Media. We believe that's going to be coming out like in the next month or two. There's a bunch of other services we haven't heard about yet. Do you see any of the upcoming Cinedigm channels or channels like Dub Channel, for example, which is already running? Do you see them as additional windows for MyTime as it's building up its audience?
At the moment, you know, our approach has been very tunnel vision on growing and building MyTime, expanding the social media outlets, expanding our distribution reach of the actual streams, getting set up and launched in international marketplaces, as well as giving authentic social media and especially for the linear channel experiences to the users across the world. So, you know, I haven't have an answer for that one quite yet, Simon.
Mm-hmm. Final question, Jacob. What is the initial reaction suggest to you? Oh, by the way, one before I get into that, are you privy to any news from Cinedigm as to what new networks they want to launch next year, aside from the multicultural one I just mentioned? I know they're doing a political affairs network that's coming up also early 2021. But have you heard about any other possibilities that they may be exploring?
I can't speak to that, but I will say the Cinedigm team is very, very aggressive. They've been extremely, extremely helpful, and, you know, they've been very good at what they do. So I've been impressed by Cinedigm. I still am impressed by Cinedigm. I think they've made tremendous partners, and I look forward to see what they keep doing. One thing I will say is we are pushing heavily for MyTime Movie Network, a Spanish offering in the United States. So we already have that up on Canela TV. And MyTime Movie Network, obviously available on Roku in English, and hopefully in the near future will be available in Spanish as well.
Yeah, we had Canela TV on our show earlier this year. They want to be very, very aggressive in original points. Do you see, by the way, the possibility of a team-up where you might team up, let's say, with Canela TV on original movie or original series in Spanish?
You know, I mean, I'm all for it. Again, for me, every opportunity is welcome. So I don't say no, and I'm always happy to have the conversation. So. I mean, look, my door is open for business, and like I said, we're too small to say no to anyone. So, you know, we really do listen and put an ear out and at the very least give a sincere response.
Yeah. Now, final question. What does the initial reaction, Jacob, tell you about the future of this channel and how far it can go?
Well, I would tell you for the future of the channel, according to the Association of National Advertisers, 85% of purchasing decisions are made from the women. And, you know, for us, it's an important demographic that is absolutely underserved in this space. So for us, you know, we're going to be authentic and true with our content, with our programming. We're going to listen to our audience, hear what they have to say. Our biggest thing is, you know, making sure that our audience is served properly. So for us, that's our focus, and I believe if we do that and take care of what we can take care of and put that content out there and meet our audience where they're watching and where they're viewing and where they want to view, I think we'll succeed. So that's our strategy, and we're going to continue down that path, and we're going to hopefully bring some exciting new, new in the sense of new to the AVOD space, but not new to the traditional TV world, and bring some of those means and those measures to what we're doing over on My Time.
Yeah. Incidentally, if you want to hear that interview we did with the folks at Canela TV, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check out our podcasts, including on iHeartRadio.com, TuneIn.com, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Again, My Time Movie Network, distributed by Cinedigm, now available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices here in the United States. And as you heard in the course of our half-hour interview, also happening all over the world. For more details about the network online, two places to go. MyTimeMovieNetwork.com, that's MyTimeMovieNetwork.com, and Cinedigm.com. Cinedigm, that's CinedigM.com. Once again, MyTimeMovieNetwork, all one phrase, .com, and Cinedigm.com. And we'll keep you posted about the new networks that Cinedigm is going to be launching throughout 2021. Jacob Nasser, the manager of My Time Movie Network, thank you so much for joining us. All the very best for a wonderful holiday season and a sensational 2021 ahead. And we'd love to have your filmmakers back or TV makers back as they're launching new projects. We would love to have them on this program. It's been a terrific pleasure.
Simon, it's a pleasure. I wish you a happy holidays. You're doing a tremendous job, and keep it up.
Thank you. Will do. All the greatest. Take care.
Bye.
Jacob Nasser, manager of My Time Movie Network, joining us live from Studio City, California. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. First, let's give the answer to our question we've been running the last 2 weeks here. Nobody got it. And here's the question. How many scripted TV series did Lloyd Bridges star in? How many scripted TV series did Lloyd Bridges star in? Now, we're just saying scripted TV series, not unscripted, not miniseries, movie, etc. The answer, 7. Here they are in order. First, I'm sure many of you know, Sea Hunt ran 3 years in syndication through ZIB in 1958. Then 1962, it was 4-star with the Lloyd Bridges show, ran a season. Then a few years later, he was the star of the Rod Serling Western. You can see some of the episodes on YouTube. It's fantastic. The Loner. Then in 1970, he was part of San Francisco International Airport on NBC. It was a made-for-TV movie. Then it became part of 4-in-1, the season-long series of 4 series presented in one time slot. Then in 1975, he took one of his character on Police Story into his own spinoff series, Joe Forrester. Then in 1984, Paper Dolls. And his final series, number 7, was Capital News in 1990 on ABC. So the answer, Lloyd Bridges starred in 7 scripted TV series over the course of his life and his entertainment career. So we're going to give you a new question right now. And if you're first with the correct answer, we have 3 prizes in play. We've got the Crazy, carried over from our last question, the Crazy Stupid Love DVD with Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, and crew. We have Talaria's Clutch Plus Money and Card Clip. And now we have the new book that we'll be highlighting on Wednesday's show, Off the Back of a Truck, authored by Nick Brachia. It's all about The Sopranos. If you're a big fan of that show, lots of great trivia to see. And if you can get the answer to this question, you will win all 3 prizes. Here's the question. Listen carefully. Who played the first pair of assistant district attorneys on Law & Order back in 1990 on NBC? Who played the first pair, that's pair, of assistant district attorneys on Law & Order on NBC in 1990. I'll say it again. Who played the first pair of assistant district attorneys on Law & Order on NBC in 1990? We want both people's names, both actors' names. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And again, if you're first with the correct answer, you will win all 3 prizes. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook at Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Once again, our classic TV question, 3 prizes in play. Who played the first pair of assistant district attorneys on Law & Order back in 1990? Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. If you won before, let somebody else win. Make it a great holiday gift for them. And all the very best to everybody contending. When we come back, you will meet one of Canada's top TV stars. He's right now the creator, the host, and the main voice of Corner Gas Animated, now running on Amazon's ad-supported TV channel, imbd.tv. He'll join us live in Vancouver. His name, and I'm not kidding you, is Brent Butt. He will be Butt with us after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tuneradio.com, together reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home for the ongoing coronavirus news channel. I am sure they have a lot of stories today about the vaccine rollout here in the U.S. of A. and also around the world. Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7, with special reporting, podcasts, other original material. Check it out on TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Found out I'm with you live from New York. One more great guest coming your way this half hour. I invite all of you to join in, that you've just joined us at the top of the hour. We welcome you in on this Monday afternoon. 37 degrees at the top of the hour. We've still got rain going here in the New York metropolitan area. First of two winter storms we're expecting this week. We are expecting a big nor'easter of snow on Wednesday into Thursday. Right now, latest forecast, 48 inches in New York City proper, upstate New York, maybe as many as a foot or more, downstate New Jersey and so forth, less than 4 inches, maybe rain in southern New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And again, great guests coming your way this half hour. So be part of the program. Interact with us at 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Numbers get anywhere. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Don't forget our chat rooms in play, too. Simon Apple 04 by name. And you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Today we are introducing a new network that's been around for a while, but now it's really getting into the original programming game. It's imbd.tv. It's the ad-supported channel from Amazon, the folks behind Amazon Prime. And one of their first original series is a program that's actually been running in Canadian television for 3 seasons. And the show is called Corner Gas Animated. It is a spinoff of one of the most popular sitcoms in Canadian television history called Corner Gas. And joining us live to talk about is the person who was the creator and star of the original series, and now this animated tune, which you can find on imbd.tv, from Vancouver, British Columbia, Brent Butt. Brent, happy, happy holidays to you.
And to you. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. You are one big Canadian star up there, and now you're starting to get your star lit here in the United States thanks to IMBTV running your Corner Gas Animated. What's been the reaction, by the way, from people down here to you up there?
The response has been fantastic. I mean, it's, you know, it's a Canadian show, but it's really universal characters. It's all just about sort of life in a small, rural, remote community. So we've had fans from all over the world chiming in saying that it reminds them of where they grew up.
Mm-hmm. Jacob 741 has just joined us in our chat room. Hi, Jacob. Welcome in. Happy holidays to you. Have a question or comment for Brent? Put it in the room and make the call, 646-652-2906. Corner Gas. When I read about this on Wikipedia, it sort of reminded me, A, of Northern Exposure, as sort of a fish-out-of-water tale, but when you really look at the premise that you created and you starred in way back when on Canadian television, it's more like Fish in the Water, where you're running this gas station, which is sort of 70 miles out of nowhere, and you meet all these quirky characters that come to play. So tell us about how you came up with the series in the first place, and why you decided years later to go tune with it.
Well, I really came up with the idea first. Like, my background is stand-up comedy. I've been a greasy nightclub comedian since the 80s. And I had this idea. I was pondering what my life would be like if I hadn't pursued comedy. And I don't really have any marketable skills, you know. I always say I can do a lot of things almost good enough to make a living, but not quite. So I thought to myself, well, if I hadn't got into comedy, I'd probably just be hanging out back in my hometown at the gas station. That's what I did growing up. I'm from a small farming town in northeast Saskatchewan, and so that premise kind of tickled me, and I kind of started writing what my life would be like if I was still living back in this small farming town. And that was kind of the general premise of it, and I wrote it up as a TV treatment and then didn't think anything of it, kind of shelved it. But then I had done a stand-up special on CTV and that had won some awards, and so they were kind of interested to know if I had any sitcom ideas. And I said, well, was actually a director who approached me and said the network wants to know if you have any TV show ideas. A director named David Story. And I said, well, I have this idea about a gas station in Saskatchewan, but I can't imagine anybody would be interested in that. Anyway, it turned out a hell of a lot of people were interested in it.
Yeah, and ran, what was it, 5 or 6 seasons?
Yeah, 6 seasons, 107 episodes. And then I pulled the plug on it. I kind of thought, you know, I didn't want to just keep doing more of the same. And, you know, when you're a creative person, you want to create. And I felt like we had told the story, and it was time to move on to other things. But I kind of thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if we could come back in 5 years and do a movie, like a theatrical movie? And we did do that. We came back. And then that movie, the response was about 20 times more than anybody expected. We were actually physically selling out theaters. And I remember my brother calling me up saying, I can't get into your stupid movie because the theater was sold out. Like I was supposed to be upset by that. And so that, you know, the response to the movie made the network call up and say, do you know, there's clearly still an appetite for this little town full of weird people. You want to do more episodes. But we didn't really want to do more of the same. And the actress that was playing my mom, her health wasn't great. So I thought to myself, well, if we were going to do some more Corner Gas, how could we do it different? And I have a background in cartooning and illustrating. And so it was a pretty easy leap to say, well, what if we tried to animate this? And I was in a good position, too, because one of the guys who wrote on our show, his name is Norm Hiscock. He went on to write for Brooklyn Nine-Nine and, you know, Saturday Night Live and a bunch of shows. But he was writing for Corner Gas, but he also wrote for King of the Hill. So here was a guy who understood our show, what our sensibility was, and he understood network primetime adult animation. So I said to him, Norm, we're thinking about doing an animated version of Corner Gas. What would we do differently? And he said, stop me right there. He said, don't do anything differently. This is the perfect show to animate. Just write more scripts. So that kind of encouraged us.
Mm-hmm. You said in an interview that one of the things you wanted to do with Corner Gas was to deal with animated, that is, was because you had the flexibility of being a toon as opposed to a program that was either filmed or videotaped, that you could do more outlandish situations or you could do more weirder characters. How much of that takes place in this toon? And even with that added weirdness or added spectacular, if you will, plot lines, how much is it still autobiographical? It still is sort of like your essence as you were growing up in that gas station?
Well, it was important to me that we remain true to what the show was in live action, because the response to the show was great. People really connected with the show, and it was working. So I didn't want to change it too much. So, but one of the great things is in the live action version, we always built in these little fantasy sequences, fantasy pop-outs, where you could see what somebody was imagining, and that allowed us to get a little wild without fracturing our reality. But the problem in real life is, you know, you got, if you're coming up with a crazy idea, you got to build it, and it's going to take time to shoot, and it's going to cost a lot of money, especially when they're often very quick jokes, you know, like a 7 or 8 second joke. You don't want to be spending $120,000 to build a new set and a rocket ship or whatever it is, you know. So the great thing about it in the animated version of Corner Gas, we're able to take those fantasy sequences to farther places. So we've done some really cool, wild things. We had a unicorn fight a Sasquatch in Brent's imagination. It was a very graphic, violent encounter. We actually had some letters that complained about that. But we're able to take those fantasy sequences to bigger, wilder, funnier places.
We are speaking with Brent Butt. He is the creator, the star, the main voice of Corner Gas Animated. It's one of the new original series that you can find now on IMB.TV, the Amazon ad-supported service available on smart TV sets and smart devices in the U.S. and other parts of the world, too. And Brent joins us live from Vancouver, Canada, one of the great production capitals in TV and film these days in North America. And he's live with us this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom, I'll be with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us this pre-Christmas week 2020 to kick it off. First of 3 episodes we're doing this week. We'll also be on Wednesday and Friday at this very time period, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific. And if you have a question or comment for Brent, well, put your fingers to the action and make the phone call go, 646-652-2906. or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, on our second episode of the week on Wednesday, we'll have as our lead guest Nick Braccia. He is a popular producer-writer, and he is the author of a brand new book that just came out about The Sopranos called Off the Back of a Truck, and it's one of our prizes this week in our new classic trivia question segment. So check out Nick, because you might win his new book, and he'll be with us live Wednesday, 3:10 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. How interesting was it to not only get as much of the original cast back to do the tune, but also in terms of picking the animation studio that you wanted to really reflect the series?
Yeah, it was a real interesting process. I mean, everybody signed on, all the cast, with the exception of Janet, who played my mom in the original show. She had passed away. But all the other actors had signed on. And, as soon as I called them to say, we're thinking about doing this, would you like to participate? They said, sign me up. They'd love to do it. And it was kind of nice because Janet, who played my mom, who passed away, her husband actually recommended her replacement. He said, you know who you should audition is Corinne Coslow, who's a good friend of Janet's, and they have a very similar voice. And so that's who's now playing the part that Janet did play. Is a good friend of hers named Corinne, who was suggested by her Janet's husband. So getting the cast back was great. And then it was a matter of just seeing if, like, I didn't want to do this show if I didn't feel like it felt right. You know, like I'm not above a shameless cash grab, but I didn't think that I wanted to do, I didn't want to damage the legacy of the show. And so I said, well, let's make a 3-minute demo and just see if it even feels right. And I started talking to designers and animation studios and found some people who really, like, incredibly talented animators. And we designed the look of the show, and we did this 3-minute demo, and everybody just, you know, it was kind of one of those situations where we all looked at each other and we said, this actually feels really good, doesn't it? It just feels like more episode of Corner Gas. And so, and the network loved it, and we just dove in and started writing scripts.
Mm-hmm. When I've seen Canadian-produced comedies, or comedies that have been done on Canadian television the last couple of decades, one sort of connecting thread, when I've seen shows like Kings of Kensington or Leonard Kenny, we had the creators of Leonard Kenny on our show over a year ago, and shows like Corner Gas and this tune, you sense quirky or quirkiness is a real, like, badge of honor for these shows. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think, you know, as Canadians, we kind of find ourselves historically sandwiched between the two most culturally powerful nations the world has ever seen. You know, England for years dominated the world, the British Empire, and, you know, we're a Commonwealth country. We come from the British and French empires. But we're right next door to the United States, which became the preeminent cultural and especially show business center in the world. And so we're kind of sandwiched in between these two giants, these cultural giants. And it was sort of difficult, I think, for us to carve out any kind of unique voice, try and find a way that something that made us unique. And what happened, I think, really organically is that kind of started driving our comedy, that kind of quirkiness, that kind of, well, we're not that, we're not that, we're this. And we sort of found this weird badge where we could be a little quirky, be a little different. And it also puts us, as a nation, it really puts us in a position to be observers. You know, we observe what the rest of the world is doing, and we observe what the U.S. is doing because they're right next door. And it puts us in the natural kind of position of commentating.
Mm-hmm. By the way, somebody's been trying in the last couple of minutes to reach us by phone. So if that's you out there, keep trying. 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see that you're on the line, my computer screen will beam you up. All right. Do you think your character is more reactive to everyone around you, or do you see it as, or do you see your character, both in the original series and in this tune, as someone who's like propelling the comedy? You know, propelling the situation, as opposed to letting the situation come to you through the other characters.
Yeah, 98% of the time I am reactive. I grew up as a big fan of Bob Newhart, and that was one of the things that I don't know, it just connected with me somehow, that he always seemed to be the kind of in the eye of the storm. He was always commenting on the weirdness around him. he was like the voice of the viewer saying, whoa, whoa, we should not do this. This is crazy. And that's the role that my character takes for sure. I mean, when you look at the people that my character works with, or his best friend, or his parents, the authority figures in town, the police, they're all off. And my character is probably the most normal and the one who's kind of like, yeah, reacting to all the craziness. There are some episodes and some storylines that my character drives, but for the most part, he's more a passive, smart aleck observer, commentator.
All right, I think we have a call, and we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, hi there. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, super. My dog's just started barking, of course.
I hear you. What's your name, by the way, and where are you calling from?
My name's Kara, and I'm calling from Old Town, North Idaho. I'm sure nobody's ever heard of it.
Well, great to have you, and we've got Brett Butt from Corner Gas Animate on the air. What's your question or feedback?
I was just curious about, actually, about the live-action show, about who stocked the store, and if what happened to all the candy and the stock that was in the store, and did you distribute it, or I know it's kind of a silly question, but...
No question is too silly. Go ahead, Brad.
Most of the stock on the shelves was actually fake. It was just props, so because it had to sit for, you know, months and months at a time. So it was dressed up to look like actual stuff, but it was, for the most part, it was just kind of fake props, you know, bags full of styrofoam, that kind of thing.
Oh, because it looks so real and natural, especially the licorice. I assume that was real.
That was real because Nancy, who played Wanda, was always eating the red strawberry licorice, the licorice whip stuff. So, we had some real food on there. Anything that was real, though, generally got consumed pretty quickly.
Right. And I just wanted to ask you about, don't you feel it's a blessing now? If you were still doing the live show and with the virus going around and the luxury of having the animation and not having to have everybody present all at the same time. You know what I mean? And the...
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much a blessing. It was very much a blessing because a lot of live production, TV and film, had to shut down during the pandemic because until they could get the proper protocols in place and everything. And it really, it froze a lot of productions. And because we were in animation, which kind of lends itself to being able to, you know, work piecemeal, everybody can kind of section off and do their thing. We were able to stay in production. You know, we had to make some changes and tweaks, but we were able to pivot and stay in production. And so that was a real blessing for sure. Count myself very fortunate.
I agree. And I just wanted to say, I think it's interesting that there comes an announcement out on the webpage or on Facebook about IMDb releasing an episode or the last season. And then it was available early, and I don't know if they're surprising us or giving it to us early, but it was quite nice to turn on the TV this morning and see the Christmas episode.
Yeah, so what happened is all of Season 3, which includes the Christmas episode, was put up on IMDb TV at once. So that was put up this morning, actually it may have gone up yesterday, but the whole season came up at once. So that actually allowed U.S. viewers to see the Christmas episode before the Canadian viewers, which is kind of funny because, you know, the American viewers were always on us about how quickly, you know, when can we see it? When can we see the new series? And now you guys get the Christmas episode actually a few hours before we can see it in Canada.
Oh, wow. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that.
No, it's good. Get the word out.
No problem. We love breaking news on this program. Absolutely. We love it.
Right.
By the way, what's your dog's name?
Well, actually, I have two dogs. The female, her name is Freya. She's a wolfhound, and we have a stray that just showed up on our porch about a year ago. His name is Jupiter.
Well, that's funny.
Way to go. Way to go for getting that dog in and for giving that dog a home.
I'm sitting here beside my dog, Oliver, who is part wolfhound. He's a mix of many things, but we think some people who raise wolfhounds say they believe there's definitely Irish wolfhound in him. He's a mix.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah. Thank goodness for dogs. Well, I just want to thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a good holiday season.
You too.
You too. You and your family and your dogs, the very, very best. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Good night.
Good night, or good afternoon. It's still afternoon here in New York, but who knows? We have a lot of people do listen to us in prime time in England and all around the world, so on next day, too, so that's amazing. By the way, Brent, when it came to Christmas episodes, you know, given that practically every comedy, every drama does a Christmas episode at some point in their existence, was it easy or hard for you to come up with a Christmas theme?
It wasn't easy to come up with the storylines. Because, you know, you want a Christmas episode to have a certain kind of feel and be a little kind of fuzzy and warm. But the town that our show takes place in, Dog River, Saskatchewan, is the people are not very nice to each other on a regular basis. There's a lot of backstabbing and conniving going on. So finding storylines that actually kind of felt true and real to the type of show that we do and the type of characters that we have, but also have that warm, fuzzy feeling was kind of tricky. But when we did land on these storylines, they felt great, and we wrote them up, and they landed perfectly, and we were all really, really happy with how the Christmas episode came together. It's kind of everything we wanted it to be. It's got that warm, fuzzy holiday feeling, but it still kind of maintains its edge.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that one of the blessings out of this pandemic was that the animation side of things was able to not only keep going but to adapt to the environment and still progress. And that's, by the way, on both sides of the border, as Netflix and other people can tell you. But also, it seems that another outcome of this pandemic has been the fact that because TV production was shut down, particularly in the United States, that we've seen a lot of top Canadian shows get their shot at U.S. exposure. And so far, it's been an amazing fall with programs like Coroner on the CW getting a second season, Transplant, which we had the creator on the show early this fall on NBC. That has just gotten a second season. Nurses just started on NBC. Looks like that's starting up pretty well. What do you think about the fact that so many Canadian-produced shows that have been on the Canadian networks, including your show, Corner Gas Animated, are now getting this kind of mass exposure in the United States?
Well, I'm all for it. It's great. You know, like when I was a little kid dreaming about getting into television, the thing that I always wanted to do, you know, for me, the high watermark would be if I was able to stay and live in Canada, but create something that got saw worldwide, you know, got seen in all the big markets like the U.S. and Europe. So for me, this is kind of like a dream come true. And I'll be honest, I kind of growing up, I thought it was a bit of a pipe dream because, you know, it just didn't really happen. And here we are in this situation, like you said, and a lot of Canadian shows are finding an audience, through streaming services or just, like you said, through the opportunities that were created because of scheduling conflicts and things like that. And I'm really happy and really proud of the level of content that we create here. You know, Hollywood in general has always been well aware that we have tremendous crews up in Canada. And, you know, a lot of times the Hollywood producers come up to Canada to shoot movies and TV shows. So it's nice to actually send some of our creative down south as well for a change. So, you know, I feel very fortunate that we're in this position.
It's also great to see the emergence of special new ventures that try to increase the amount of Canadian content or connected for Canadian series creators in the United States and around the world. The Canadian Content Accelerator, which we covered earlier this fall, and also the Content Fund that's out to cause female unscripted and later unscripted television series. You know, you've been six seasons of Corner Gas live action. How many more do you want to do animated?
I'm having a great time doing it. For me, that's always one of the things. It's like, as long as it's fun, I want to keep doing it. And it feels to me right now, like I said the other day, I'm going to draw the line at 40 more seasons. That's it. 40 seasons of Corner Gas Animated, and I'm shutting it down. So make your plans now, everybody.
All right. Look out, Simpsons, which is now 30 and counting. You've got competition.
Yeah, I'm going for their record.
Absolutely, and you might just make it too. You just might, Brent. The show is Corner Gas Animated, and you can catch it right now on IMBD.TV. That's Amazon's ad-supported service available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Now in its third season on Canadian television. More details about the program online here in the United States and elsewhere. Here's where you go: www.amazon.com/IMBD.TV. That's www.amazon.com/IMBD.TV. And I promise you that given the original programming plan that this service is about to put in play, including the new Judge Judy series that is expected to go on fall of 2021, we will keep you updated that they got a lot in the pipeline, and we hope to showcase them as much as possible. This is our first time with them. Promise you, it will not be the last. Brent Buck from Corner Gas Animate and Corner Gas before that, thank you very, very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure all the way. All the very best to you and your animation crew and cast for a wonderful holiday season and many, many more seasons to come.
Well, thanks very much, Simon. It's been an absolute blast talking to you. All the best.
Same here, all the way from this side of the border. Take care. All the greatest.
Okay, bye-bye.
Brent Butt, curator and star of Corner Gas Animate on Amazon's IMBD.TV service, joining us live from Vancouver, British Columbia. A few months ago, we had a wonderful person named Olga Nesterova on this program. She is a person I've known for many, many years from ballroom dancing and other things, and now she is presiding over 1STV.network, which is now available to smart TV sets and devices, starting with Roku. Well, after we did our interview, which you can catch on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com, I did an episode of one of her programs called Mindful Conversations. Well, that episode is running tonight on 1STV Network at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I had the chance to talk about where things are going with TV in 2020, projections for 2021, and a whole lot more great info. And Olga and I had a marvelous time. So check her series out. It's really terrific. Mindful Conversations tonight, latest episode with yours truly, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here on 1STV Network, available on Roku. Thank you to all of our guests for being here. We're off to a great start this week with our three-episode week, and we're happy all of you joined in for the ride. We are back on Wednesday with Nick Brascia. He is the author of the brand-new book, Off the Back of a Truck. If you're a Sopranos fan, you will love this episode. And remember, get involved with our classic trivia contest this week, and that could be one of the prizes you could win. And don't forget, coming up on Friday, we'll wrap the week up with two of the key people behind Black Tag, the very unusual Netflix YouTube venture. They'll be starting in early 2021. Chief Executive Officer Akina Nwabe and President Osama Sabosau. And from the Fox medical drama, The Resident, starting its newest season next month, executive producers Andrew Chapman and Peter Elcock. All coming up Wednesday, Friday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tamabi Televised. If you came in on today's program, go to blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. If you have any comments on the show, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And remember, we always respond to what you have to say within 24 hours, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate, BTR, is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Sadie Sonnenberg is head of content, the co-founders, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tamabi Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial with one or two audio books, remember, too, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, it's audibletrial.com/televised. For Tamabi Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. We are back in two. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Wednesday. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Congratulations to everybody getting the vaccine out today with the Operation Warp Speed and the Coronavirus Task Force. We are on the way to licking this pandemic now more than ever. And do what you can to be safe and sound. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.